This is podcast number 160 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson, and today my message is, There is Hope. I just finished recording the third book in the Young Folks Bible Library I've been telling you about that was published in 1911, primarily written by mothers. I'll start recording the fourth one today that's entitled The Wonderful Story of Jesus. My heart is filled to overflowing as I have been immersed in these stories, which is ironic because the stories themselves are really disturbing. One of my daughters is doing a final review after the editing before she posts them, and she said, "Why are these people so messed up? They're all awful." And these were the chosen people, even the ones who were supposed to be the great ones, like King David. Committing adultery and then killing a spouse to cover his tracks isn't exactly on our list of heroic traits. And what about his sons? They were beyond disastrous. They were horrible. And what about this chosen people who are wiping out cities, killing all the inhabitants and taking possession of them? And a prophet calling out the bears to kill the children who made fun of his baldness? And even Jehovah seems like a God full of wrath and anger and vengeance. Are these really the stories we want to be telling our children? Actually, yes. Because as I have immersed myself in these stories, my heart is seeing things far more clearly, and I'm gaining understanding that is being found in the white spaces between the lines, like Mr. Rogers talks about. Here are some of the lessons that are emerging for me, which are so relevant to the problems America is facing today, as well as the whole world. We, too, were a chosen people, brought to a promised land where no king would rule over us. God was to be our ruler, and for a time, he was. When the children of Israel demanded a king, shifting from personal responsibility to having someone else fight their battles for them, Samuel warned them of the dangers. And everything he warned about came true. As I watch the role of government in our everyday lives grow bigger every single day, as I watch us as a people generally reject God, as I see corrupt leaders, I see the same weakening of us as a nation as what happened in Israel. I almost hate to check the news every day because I am appalled at what is going on, and it feels impossible to fight against. The prophets of the Old Testament felt exactly the same way. The messages they delivered in their day, which were dismissed, mocked, and scoffed at, and over which many prophets lost their lives over, were messages like these. Turn back to God. Live a moral life. Strengthen your family. Quit taking advantage of your neighbor. Quit making idols of your riches. Quit living the outward form of your religion. God requires the heart. The prophets promised the people, if we turn back to God, he will fight our battles for us. That is the message of the Old Testament. And when we look at the problems we are facing, it is our solution as well. And I'm afraid that these messages are being met in the same way, dismissed, mocked, and even reviled. Furthermore, what came through these stories loud and clear was that no matter how horrible you are, and these people in the Old Testament were some of the worst, God is ever full of loving kindness, and he never, never gives up on us. If he can love such a degenerate people, he can love me and my petty weaknesses. None of us are beyond help or hope. For today's sampler, I want to share the final chapter from the book I just finished recording, Lessons from the Great Teachers. Here are the books we typically avoid, at least I did because I didn't understand, the books of Haggai, Obadiah, Habakkuk, Joel, Zechariah. These prophets were poets, and their messages are buried in poetic expression. But these wonderful mother storytellers who wrote this particular series have given them personalities and place them in their proper setting to help us make sense of their messages. And the messages are for us. The children of Israel of that day looked for a king, a deliverer, to save them from their oppression and difficulties. Just as many people today look for a new president or new elected officials to solve our problems. But the solution Jesus brought to the world then is the same one in place today. Love God. Love your neighbor. Purify your hearts. It is not the Constitution that will make us free. It can only keep us free if we are a people living under the rule of God, if we love God. Will we ever get it right? That's where there is hope, because the answer is yes. That day of universal peace is assured, and you and I are right in the middle of the task of making it such. We have a role to play, and I believe the mothers of this generation are key. God has planned and prepared for this day all along. He knows exactly what He's doing, even though it looks pretty messy from our point of view, just as it looked pretty hopeless in the eyes of the Old Testament prophets. Yet they never lost hope. In the chapter called Malachi's Promise, it reads, "Another element in the teaching of the prophets was that there would always be a pure remnant of the people." Isaiah had always believed that there would be a remnant that would be true. So Malachi was sure of a certain few that were followers of Jehovah, and he was sure that those few were never forgotten by their God. And God would use that remnant to keep a light shining in the world, a light that would grow brighter and brighter until the perfect day. I believe you are of the remnant. If your heart is turned to God and you are striving to do His will, you most assuredly are. As you share these stories with your children, may they stir their hearts until they finally say, "Enough! We will stop this madness, and we will be true to our loving Father, and we will share His message of love to the world." For that is the meaning of the elect. They are elected to be a light and to bring others to the love and joy only found in the one true God. As Moses declared, "Would that all the Lord's people were prophets." Here now is that concluding chapter from Lessons from the Great Teachers. Conclusion. As we look back over the stories of the prophets, we find that they were preaching to Israel for about 400 years. They were men of marked difference of condition and training. Elijah came from the desert. Amos was a herdsman. Micah was a man of the countryside. Isaiah and Zephaniah were noblemen. Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Zechariah were priests. Some of these men had the best learning that their day afforded. Some were men of the people. There are differences also in their conduct and in their sermons. Elijah, with fiery zeal, destroys the prophets of Baal and the king's soldiers. Nahum and Obadiah rejoice in the vengeance that overtakes their foes. The prophecy of the exile breathes a universal compassion. The story of Jonah exhibits Jehovah as caring for the children and even for the cattle of the heathen. There was a growth in the recognition of the goodness and the mercy of God. Yet in their great essentials, the prophets may be regarded as belonging to one order and as exhibiting the same characteristics. They were all patriots. Never among any people has there been a succession of public men extending through four centuries of national life who have exhibited a nobler and more sacrificial patriotism than these preachers of Israel. They were not always regarded as patriots, for they had not that cheap and stupid love of country which cares only for national advantage and prosperity. Their patriotism was in their longing for their country to be so good that it therefore must be great, and for this hope of national righteousness the prophets were willing to die. We must include as a general characteristic of all the prophets that they were men of remarkable eloquence. They are not all on an equality in this respect. Isaiah's lofty oratory is perhaps the most superb. The exile prophecy of redemption is the most sublime. Jeremiah exhibits the deepest feeling. But in most of the prophets there is a grandeur, a dramatic power, a poetic sweetness, a gracious appeal that puts this succession of men, taken as a whole, in the front rank of the world's orators. The prophets were men of intense religious faith. They knew God. He was not to them an abstraction, but a reality. Jehovah was their friend, with whom they spoke as a man speaks to his friend. The people had a very narrow view of Jehovah, thinking of him as a national deity side by side with other national deities. But the prophets believed that the God of their little land was Jehovah of hosts, the God of the whole earth. They believed that all of the great events of the world were conducted by his power. This made them men of intense religious conviction. Growing out of this religious conviction was that passion for righteousness which burned in the soul of every prophet. Religion never meant to them mere formalities. It always meant conduct. The sermons of the prophets are simply a succession of stern and stirring demands that the people shall be righteous. The one great need, as all the prophets saw it, was that justice shall roll down as waters and righteousness as a mighty stream. And righteousness in the minds of the prophets was always a social matter. They never thought of mere personal goodness which a man might have alone with God. They always believed that religion and national prosperity alike were founded on the right relations of common life. The purity of the family, the love of husband and wife, of parents and children, justice between the rulers and judges and the people, fair dealing in business, kindness between the rich and the poor, the employer and the servant, the lender and the borrower, these were the great duties. Micah summed it all up when he said, "What doth Jehovah require of thee but to do justly, and to love kindness, and to walk humbly with thy God?" And so spoke all the prophets. They were true optimists. While they pointed out the evils of their time in the most unsparing fashion, they always believed in the coming good. In different ways and under different forms, they ever looked to a glorious future. The righteousness which they preached so passionately, they were sure would at last prevail. The peace that they so ardently hoped for, they were certain would become universal. Sometimes they thought a great king full of the spirit of Jehovah would bring this blessed future. Sometimes they thought that the religion of Jehovah, full of righteousness and peace, would win the allegiance of the world. Sometimes they saw the deep truth that the salvation of men comes through the vicarious suffering of the righteous. But always they expected the world to become a place of blessing, and they expected Israel would be the servant of God to bring it to pass. Israel's great gift to the world was the preaching of her prophets. Assyrian, Babylonian, Egyptian empires passed away. The splendid palaces of that ancient world are in ruins. But the burning words of the great Hebrew orators never die. Many years after the last prophets had spoken, there lived a Jewish boy on the borders of that same fertile plain of northern Israel which the poet prophets had so often celebrated in song. He read with keen interest the stories of the great preachers. They were his people. They spoke to his heart. His soul kindled as he read their words. He, too, was a patriot longing for his nation's good. He lived with God in a fellowship so beautiful and simple that God was to him a father. He saw that righteousness was the only glory of life and the only ground of happiness. He believed in the good time that was coming. He read and reread the words of the prophets, and when at last there came to his heart the same call to go forth and preach that had come to the young prophets before him, he spoke their words. He lifted those words into a greater beauty and a finer truth, but he always spoke from the preparation that the prophets had given him. So our own faith is joined with that of the prophets of old Israel, for Jesus of Nazareth, our Lord, was the greatest of the prophets.